way to go. We are the people. They are nuclear madness. Three Mile Island was only the start of something bigger. They're gonna blow us apart. We are the people. They are nuclear madness. Stand up.
That was Nuclear Madness by Joseph Lee Hooker, with lots of video if you like to go to YouTube and check it out. And after being unable to reach him for a number of programs, we were able to get in touch with Brent Adams, who's been working on a variety of programs. Regular listeners know him. And without further ado, here's a phone interview. On the line, we have Brent Adams, who's 24-hour storage, day and night storage, that's the right way to put it, is still located, as I understand it, near Wheelworks, near the Broadway Bridge, near the stadium. How would you describe it?
Lonely little parking lot at the corner of Front and Laurel or Broadway, behind Wheelworks, between the Wheelworks and the River Levee Path, over by the stadium there, yes.
And so far, no problems with the city. Things are rolling along fine, I hope?
Rolling along surprisingly well. Not one hiccup, not one complaint. Had a really good meeting yesterday with city analyst Susie O'Hara yesterday. It's our second meeting. We had come up with a six-month plan. We are totally in line with our commitments to the city now, which is we have to vacate that location a month from the 1st. So we'll be out of there into a new location October 1st. And we already have got that new location. I will be letting people know more about that on September 1st, but to suffice to say, it's going to be a fixed location up more near Ross. The Ross clothing store at the nexus of Highway 1 and River Street, Highway 9, on the other side of the levee along Felker Street. So there's a footpath over to the unit, and so we'll be at a fixed location. And it took a long time to, you know, a lot of work to try to get that going, and now, you know, we'll have to try to support it, you know, with fundraising.
East side of the river or the west side of the river?
East east side of the river.
Wow. So that's sort of where the old Camp Paradise used to be, more or less. Huh?
Very near, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything new and of interest come out of your conversations with Susie? I know she was enthusiastic when I talked to her about the one thing that you yourself have not been terribly enthusiastic about because of concerns about it. Differences of opinion do happen around the what I call the barbed wire boneyard or the River Street campground, which she was trying to, I guess it looks like they're going to be continuing it. Is that your take on that too?
Yeah, I have to, besides my assertion that I believe it can be done far better, more effective and efficient and successful at healing lives interpersonally, creating community and benefiting our community at a much less of a cost than has been done, which is my full critique, really. I'll say little about it. I don't know where they're going to. I'm trying to offer this storage program as a free gift to the city, as I know that they're in a public relations, problem, challenge, let's call it, and that they're extending their deadline and finally likely going to be closing the camp towards the eventuality of opening the first iteration, first blush of some sort of shelter construction that we have not been revealed yet. I expect we'll see something at City Hall on Tuesday. I haven't looked at the calendar.
Yeah, it's the last item.
What I want to offer them is
it's the last item. It's the last item on the city council afternoon agenda.
So I would like them to say, yeah, this, that, and the other, and here's a bright spot. Storage program is up and running, and no matter who we kick out of the encampment or whatever, everybody has an opportunity. Every single person who sleeps outside in the city of Santa Cruz has an opportunity to store their belongings.
Now there are, of course, hundreds and hundreds of people who sleep outside. How many so far have availed themselves of your storage facility?
More than 140 people are in our system. We currently are storing the belongings of about 105 people, and 60 people are very active. 100 and whatever I said, 5 are active, and then the rest have either vacated the program or we're vacating them this weekend because we're reaching our 90-day limit. And, so, and if we haven't seen them within 90 days, then we remove them from activity.
Hmm. Now, I know in the last time we spoke or the time before, you mentioned you personally had experienced a break-in. How's that going in terms of what is often, a problem, particularly for homeless folks, is theft?
Yeah, it was destabilizing interpersonally. Also, it's hard to continue forward when I think I know who did it, but that person has become very soft and gentle and friendly and, almost suspiciously, but I've decided not to completely accuse them. I lost some valuable things, the cameras that I'd been working with. To do a lot of the work on the documentary and documentation. Of course, I have an iPhone 8, so I can continue on with a pretty quality camera, but that's a handheld thing, and it's not really a documentary camera. And then lots of the really good gear that I've been storing up for the warming center. I have a couple different levels of gear. We have general blankets, sleeping bags, warm clothing, and then when really quality, expensive gear comes my way, I've been keeping it in my home, so that I can give it specifically to people who I know are going to value it and take care of it over time. That's down jackets, anything with Gore-Tex, things like that. And all of that treasure trove was removed. Also, all of my personal jackets, so I'm left without even a winter coat myself.
Mm.
And so that was, and also all the little things I'm discovering one by one, from flashlights to bottle openers to French knives in the kitchen, whatever. Just every little thing was ransacked.
It's only happened once, though, so far.
Yeah, it's only happened once. So I can go on. Really, what the truth about it is, I've emotionally dealt with it. I'm past it. I don't really have to keep dwelling on it. Forward, I just have to, I'm shopping for a new used camera from Craigslist and trying to figure out which one I want to get, it gives me an opportunity. The hilarious thing is my bike was stolen a fourth time since then, and it was kind of my fault. I didn't lock it up. I was I was transporting things from one vehicle to another, and then in 5 minutes the vehicle had been moved, and I was like, fuck, that's on me. It was about 3:30 in the morning, so I decided not to put the word out because I felt like I just kind of gave it to the street. And after three thefts, the fourth one, I was like, okay, this one, I'm just going to let it go. Well, a week and a half goes by, and somebody calls me up and says, it looks like we found your bike. So-and-so had it. And then I get another call telling me that the person who had it had it. So that was like a double call, and so I got it right back. It's hilarious. That four times stolen, four times returned.
Must be a warm feeling.
That, it feels so good. You know, that's just, I call it street cred, but it's also the nature of the people returning the bikes. You know, you will find some real good personality traits with people you wouldn't expect to have them. That's all.
And this is a kind of an entirely different subject. I happened to run into a member of the final four of the Santa Cruz 11. You may remember the group that were harassed and dragged into court day after day, week after week, month after month, on what essentially were activism-busting charges that had nothing to do with any real damages that were done by those people, generally speaking. That's my feeling about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember that most of us, and I was one of them, as were you, hung together, or at least tried to, in our own way at the beginning. And then at the end, you alone, apparently, if your account is accurate as you described to me, were sort of left hanging because, you know, other people made deals, and that was...
Yeah. The stunning thing is we were going to hang together to the bitter end, and in the last day in court, some of the other defendants, their lawyers had agreed to plead, and they didn't tell me, and they didn't have a conference with me, and then I was left standing in the hallway with my lawyer, and my lawyer was like, Brent, we can't fight this alone. And I'm like, what are you talking about? We're fighting this together. And she says, it's just you now. And I was like, whoa, that's why I had that, like, you know, it's not a story that most people know. People still, you know, trade on their you know, militancy, their, what I just enough years have passed that I'm just calling people out. Like, you kind of, I felt fucked over in the end. It's not a big deal. Years have passed, but I don't want this to go down as these, you know, at some point, I just think, I'm happy saying that solidarity, actually, if you look at from the occupation, the 2 months of it, into the building takeover, into the defense, all of that sort of stuff. I have a critical experience of a lot of that stuff, and how we left the encampment and what, you know, these are brilliant high watermarks, things we should be really proud of, but sometimes we left a lot of it to people who were using terms like, you know, they use terms like mutual aid and solidarity, but in the end, they'll just fucking... serve themselves, and that's what happened in this case.
Well, what I wanted to say about that was that this conversation I had with one of these individuals, this person said to me that they were actually sorry about what happened, that it was wrong what happened to you, and that they had been pressured into their plea. And so at some point I could talk to you more about it, but...
No, that would be okay if I had... There should have been a conversation with the four defendants. That
of course,
ended up being a bullshit cop-out.
Of course.
They said, we were in the hallway together conferring with our lawyers. Nobody stepped the 20 yards over to say, Brent, we're going to do this thing. Pressured or not, they left me fucking hanging.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, and you've had to overcome the... you know, the tendency of the city to regard you as Mr. Bad Boy, because not only were you one of the Santa Cruz 11, but you were outspoken on the issue, and you were a documentarian of what went down as well. Speaking of which, have you done anything more around, or have you information about campsites, homeless folks in Santa Cruz, stuff happening here and there that you might want to pass on?
Yeah, it's really weird right now as a doc, as somebody who's trying to keep their finger pulse on that, is that so much, I'm so busy. I actually took a little bit of a vacation last week. I took 5 or 6 days out of town. But I'm interacting with people at the storage program, so it's a good way for me to keep tabs on where the camps are and what's happening. A lot of people recently have been flushed into town again. I don't know if you've heard this, but there are a lot of people camping along the levee in downtown over the last 2 or 3 nights. There's a strong community vibe. Again, I think that happens in the high point of the end of summer where people are really supporting each other. They're making friends. I'm not hearing a lot about a lot of theft on the street right now, but in terms of camps, I haven't seen anything at Camp Paradise. They've totally gutted Sycamore Grove, but I have not done any actual research or reconnaissance in any of these spaces yet. I'll try to do that over the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Anything around the Homeless Lack of Services Center on Coral Street?
No, but we're, from what we hear, they're going to be the new shelter configuration.
Right, they're talking about building new new buildings there, or taking over new buildings and refurbishing them, something to that effect?
I don't know. I keep hearing about a large temporary structure in the parking lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm hearing AFC is in conversations with the city to run the food program for this shelter. We advise them to don't be used to help reduce the HSC operating budget just because you have a bunch of volunteers. Don't be used as the city's bitches just because you have a volunteer crew. Have them pay you appropriately for the service.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. But I saw the AFC people in the mayor's office yesterday. So evidently those talks are continuing. But also they're talking also about moving the safe spaces concept forward, and I don't know where they're at with that.
Now, this is the Association of Faith Communities, and we're talking about a program for safe parking out at Hoosie Wutz's Church on the edge of town.
Yeah, it's a Seventh-day Adventist parking lot, campground on Old San Jose Road.
So it would include both vehicular camping and ground camping?
No, just vehicular camping.
And I know that you've expressed, your suggestion that this could be done with volunteers, that they don't have to wait for large appropriations. I did write to, I got a letter from the actual, I guess, John, what's his name, Terwilliger?
John Showalter.
Thank you, John Showalter, who, was, trying to cover his ass, in my view, but, maybe, genuinely this or that. But I guess, if you were to put together a program like that, and you've already, I think, at one point talked about this on the air, and I know you also expressed some sensitivity because you don't want to alienate these folks at the Association of Faith Communities. I understand that. On the other hand, I certainly don't mind, calling a spade for me. That's from my perspective when it's obvious. And I haven't done a lot of work in putting together the logistics of an overnight situation, but I was told by a reputable source whose name shall go unnamed that, you just need to have somebody parked there in a vehicle overnight who kind of shepherds the whole thing and maybe a few cleanup people, and you don't need massive amounts of staff and volunteers. What's your sense about if you were to run such a program, if you wish to volunteer these thoughts?
Oh, yeah. So we put together a bare bones program. Met with Joe Walter, who is the chair of the board of the AFC, and does, since he's retired, he's able to do a lot of footwork and represent them mainly. And we also have, as the nonprofit Warming Center program, have put ourselves in the mix as much as they can use us. Like, we would like to partner with such a deal. We would, our model shows that it's volunteer, but what you have to do mainly is write very strong program of rules, how they're going to be enforced, how do you keep the neighborhood safe, what does that boundary perimeter look like, how do you, what's the involvement of the police? I would love to operate a program like that. We are looking at possibly a cost sharing of an individual for this coming season because I have to hire a assistant manager for the operations in Santa Cruz for the Warming Center program. like we will have in Watsonville, since we have an additional program, the storage program, all of a sudden my capacity is really hitting the wall. But that individual could also help manage such a program as Safe Spaces, so that individual could have full-time employment potentially. And then a person lives on site, like a pensioner, retiree, or anybody stays there full-time. They check people in and out, in the morning. I mean, in the evening, out in the morning. You don't have to worry about the biggest thing that AFC was concerned about was getting $250,000 for social service programs. Well, my assertion is people just need a safe, protected place off of the street to park and sleep in their vehicles overnight. Let's stop mucking up the plan with these, wraparound services they already exist, and we're not seeing any benefit. I don't know if anybody can point to any benefit of the River Street camp and the quote-unquote services that were supposed to be offered for people. What has become of that? Where's the evidence of that? Or even wraparound, all the services offered to people in the downtown streets team. For all of that money, where's the bang for the buck? So I say, you don't need any of that. What we're really talking about is a safe place for people to park. They have to have their cars registered. They have to have licenses and insurance, and then sign a basic contract for behavior of being there. Come in, and it's very basic, Robert. I put that. I had a conversation with the Showalter about that. Offered warming center to help you at least guide or direct in one way or another. We'll probably end up with nothing because that's the way these organizations do. They don't partner well. I told them my strong word. I think they really heard it in their culture is, you must do the safe parking program by any means necessary this winter. And I think they really heard that, and they feel honor bound to kind of make that happen. So I'm pleased that they're probably going to make it happen. They've got the most difficult thing to achieve is the place, the location, a willing property owner.
Have you? This is a slightly back on. You mentioned Susie O'Hara's, your conversations with her. And she, of course, has been, directly involved with providing social services or organizing their coming in and out of the River Street campground or the Boneyard special, as I sometimes call it, with prayer flags. Let's not forget the prayer flags.
Prayer flags are to disguise the barbed wire.
Oh, no, there's also razor wire off to the side. That isn't too well disguised. But,
yeah.
But nonetheless, I was told by a worker there that they do have, some people from the county come in once or twice a week. Have you gotten any indication from her that they have had any success? I mean, I'm trying to be accurate I don't want to bad mouth them improperly, and I want to also good mouth them when it's appropriate. Do you have any indication that anything is? I mean, I think I've mentioned it. You see this big sign outside the homeless lack of services center on the highway, that 700 people housed, doesn't say over how many years, of course, but how long that housing lasted or anything.
We're coming out of a culture where we were enculturated as buy smart solutions to homelessness, to demand of all projects to have evidence based. That's not just, you don't pull it out of the air. You have to actually document. Programs have to produce measurable results. This is not flim-flam stuff, and this is, people within the city and county government and all the mega nonprofits. So when they post something like out there and there's no reference online, there's no database for the evidence base, there's no measurable results produced, somebody in this community has to call them on that. We are now demanding a higher standard from programs like the Downtown Streets Team or the River Street Camp, when they say, like they said to me over and over and over, we're not trying to just move people around or shelter them overnight. We're trying to get people into housing. Well, when you put that stake in the ground, now you have to be judged by your statement. And we never do that. We never hold them accountable. What happened to, what I want to say is, what is the metric of success? Show us any data for when they say at the last time they had a council meeting a month or two ago, 4 people or so have been moved into housing. What does that even mean?
Right.
It's just bullshit, and I have to be really careful because, you know, I want to work with the city, but also at some point, like, you know, it's important to build a program that you can say clearly, like, rather than saying all of that stuff that they said, they should have just said what a camp is, has its main aim, not putting people towards housing. It's just give people a safe place while they're in the encampment so that they can heal interpersonally and move towards housing, not make these statements that everything has to be caught in this paradigm that everything is getting people, you know, it's all a pathway to housing. Everyone's doubling down on the smart path to homelessness. Smart path. And it's a paradigm that we're stuck in, and it's robbing us of actually being able to help people with real things as we're living in some fantasy that you know, where do they house 700 people? What's the numerical breakdown? We already know that there are transitional housing developments that pre-exist, that predate 180-180, and yet they're claiming success for those. They shouldn't be able to.
Well, I think the reality is that, you know, they don't have the housing, and they don't really want to provide, you know, ongoing temporary help for people in the sense that, you know, in any kind of continuous or overt way. I mean, it is true they like to say, well, there's a shelter people can go to whenever anybody talks about the sleeping ban or something. But I guess my question is, you know, since you're on better terms with Susie than you, I mean, we're on bad terms with her, but you are, you know, now working with her in some way, or you guys are working together. I think essentially they've seen the importance of what you're doing, and much as they hate to admit it, they have to, you know, address it in some way. And so they, you know, they'll do what they can to, you know, kind of sidle in and take the credit for whatever they can, or maybe even help you, although I am not aware they're providing much help.
We were able to use their parking lot. We didn't get permission. We were there. We will be
right.
Have been there for 3 months on city property. So we have a lot to be grateful for the city. They didn't give it to us willingly. We just did it. We asked for permission. They refused to hear that, you know, and they requested that we move off of that parking lot, and we are in perfect timing into private property.
Right.
They would do well not to try to stop this program, but what we want to do is always have the hand out to shake. Like, let's work together.
Yeah, sure.
You can claim this program if you want to. Just don't try to shut it down.
Do you have any? No, of course. Do you have any sense, though, that have you ever spoken with O'Hara about, you know, actual concrete social services that have been effectively provided by the, I don't know, $90,000 a month campground over
there? No. We stay far away from that. That's actually a sore spot for her and I.
Hmm.
You know, when they refer to, you know, the paparazzis at the beginning, that was partially me trying to document that encampment. I've documented 2 dozen all over the Northwest, 3 dozen, and I thought I could at least document the establishment of one in my own hometown. It turned out that I'm a pariah here. I'm not welcome I'm definitely not an official journalist, but I would have thought that I would have had. Yeah, so it got really, really weird, and the moment saw me shouting her down in public, and it was really unfortunate that I, you know, I let my emotions go there. So we don't talk about the encampment. And I, you know, officially stand back. Our official statement as a nonprofit is we want that encampment to go well, to do well, and to provide the things that they say it's providing for the people who need it most. We also say every dollar spent in this community on homelessness needs to be available for every person experiencing homelessness, not a small handful. And I think I would like you to see everyone adopt that sort of concept, that there shouldn't be some elite group that gets to benefit from the $90,000 where everyone else, you know, has a harder time than ever.
Yep, true enough. Any reports of encampment shutdowns around Santa Cruz in the last couple of, you said you've been kind of out of town.
And... it's weird. I guess I'm not, I haven't heard anything, and I have to, like I said, I have to double down on my responsibility there. We'll be moving into a space. I have to write a couple of grants here for 2 programs, and so I'll be freaking busy. I don't know if you also know, but we're doing a fundraiser on September 17th called the Dinner Theater, where we're really going to put on a stage presentation with music, theatrics, and serve dinner. India Joe's.
You mentioned it.
Serving food.
You have mentioned it.
I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. I also have to put a lot of work now until then into trying to get people to come to the event.
Any reports?
It's a little pricey. It's that we're at $45 a ticket.
I know. That's what you were saying. Any reports? I've heard of homeless deaths recently. Have you got any more specifics on that?
No. Who?
Well, that we heard about, I guess, what the hell is her name? Mouse?
That's terrible. I think that was last month. That's fucked up because it comes an echo of a death, not a, you know, everybody heard about it too late. I hate that. Like, oh, you know, Mouse died last month or some shit like that.
Yeah, and I think there were several others who also, I don't have their names.
He will be sorely missed. What a great person. What a terrible relationships to substance abuse.
I think I've interviewed her. I don't remember exactly who she was, but
If you saw her, you would recognize her instantly.
Well, let me leave it there and give you the last word again, as ever. And what do you got for me as a farewell here?
Well, for me, it's the same old thing. WarmingCenterProgram@gmail is a way to contact us. WarmingCenterProgram.com is where you'll find a lot of our stuff. We do the day and night storage program. Coalition on Homelessness will be our marquee on our new office space that'll include the storage program, my desk, a meeting space, a place where you can come and drop off goods. If listeners have warm clothing or blankets to donate, please donate them now. We have a donation barrel at Cruise IO downtown. We're really thin, and it's cold at night. Very cold in the mornings. And the hotline, 831-234-9848. Thank you, Robert.
And your jacket size is?
I'm a medium.
Now let's keep that in mind, shall we?
I lost weight.
Well, there you are. Thank you. We're talking with Brent Adams, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you.
Bye. Right. Bye-bye.
And that's all the contemporary news from this edition of Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. Now into the flashback, back to November 28th, 2013. This is a show you can also download by going to the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org and then follow to the, latest shows and go to November 28th. You're going to find 2 hours, and you're going to be listening now to 2 hours with Jasmine and Shade Byron, Daniel and also Colin Campbell Clyde, as they discuss Officer Hernandez's what essentially amounts to assault and battery under color of authority at the Salvation Army when he approached these two because they were leaving, well, the two being Jasmine and her husband Shade, as they left the Salvation Army's with a plate of food. Sounds like the Red Church. Anyway, there's also former council member Micah Posner at the last hearing of one of the sidewalk shrinkage ordinances, and more. James Richard Armstrong from Berkeley on battling police by standing up to them in Reading. I'm not sure I got to Reading, but we'll see. And then sleeping and smoking tickets for Raven Man. And that's only a few of the things you'll be hearing if you stay with us for the next 2 hours in this flashback. Thanks for listening. Contact us at 423-4833, and I'll call you back.